Hey, y'all, welcome to the Mean Green Nation podcast special bi-week edition, wherein we called up some of our favorite Conference USA bloggers, podcasters that are on our schedule. A lot of filters there, huh? We want to see what's going on around Conference USA as we have a bi-week. So first up is Shane from FAU Owl's Nest. All right, Shane, so tell me a little bit about FAU. What do you think, like, Mean Green fans have to know about FAU? Because I think, like, our immediate thought would be, like, okay, FAU is going to be a little bit, I guess, they're going to have a tough road integrating the new coach, new coaching staff, new coordinator, all the whole thing there. But they've been a little bit more surprising, and I think, like, the advanced stats have FAU beating North Texas when we make a visit down there in October, the 21st. So, like, what should we know about you guys? Why are you guys so good?
Well, you know, FAU is a team that had a lot of talented players over the last few years. If you've kind of seen in Conference USA, the record hasn't been that great. But they've lost a lot of really close games where they've just kind of blown up themselves. And, you know, Charlie Partridge was a great recruiter and a good guy, but, you know, he was kind of out-coached in a lot of times the second half of games and didn't make adjustments, and it felt like for the last few years we were always just kind of a player or two away from being a bowl team. Lane obviously brings, you know, kind of a championship pedigree and a really good staff. I think that's kind of, you know, with all the talk of Lane, people don't realize how good the staff is. You know, they have two coaches, his brother Chris Kiffin and Corey Batoon, the safety coach, who both came from Ole Miss. And you just don't see G5 programs getting, you know, assistance from Power 5 programs, you know, essentially doing the same roles they were before. And you're already starting to kind of see, just from week one to the win over Middle Tennessee, how much better they're getting. Another thing is, you know, FAU from spring football to fall added 37 new players between freshmen and JUCO.
Wow.
So, you know, even before the year, Lane was, you know, this is going to be a team that gets better throughout the year. He was kind of hinting at that, you know, and of course, you know, I know North Texas knows this, you know, how difficult the triple option is to see. We opened First Navy, then it was on the road to Wisconsin. So it's taken a couple weeks for it to get kind of moving, but they definitely have it going in the right direction now.
Yeah, I didn't really see. I know, like, I know you guys, the Owls were favored by about 2, I think it was, against Middle Tennessee. I thought the Blue Raiders would do a better job, you know, like competing. It didn't seem like they competed in that game. I mean, and, you know, like, I think you guys could beat Old Dominion, mostly because Old Dominion's down. I still feel like I don't know too much about Florida Atlantic, what they are. Have you seen, like, better play week to week? I know the Navy game, they had, like, 1 or 2 explosive plays, but then it was just a blowout. Also, that game was weird. It was, like, a 3-hour delay there. Have you seen, like, you know, like, you've watched all the games. Have you seen, like, the play improve, and you can point to a couple things there and say, yeah, that's better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're just kind of, it took the staff a little bit to really see where the strengths were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the name you're obviously going to know and you see throughout the conference is Devin Motor Singletary, mm-hmm. And our other running back, Buddy Howe. You know, the FAU is going to ride them the entire year. They're two of the better backs in the league. Motor, I mean, already has 9 touchdowns this year. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry. You know, we're still kind of in a quarterback battle. For, you know, the fans who follow, you know, we got the Last Chance U kid, DeAndre Johnson. He unfortunately, you know, through the fall, they were kind of wondering what was going on with him. He wasn't performing well and, you know, found out that he had a blood clot. So, in his throwing arm. So, unfortunately, you know, it kind of explained maybe why he wasn't performing so well, you know, some of the velocity on his balls, some of the beat writers are writing about. So, you know, we're kind of with Driscoll and Parr, which is a quarterback battle we've kind of seen for 2.5 years now. And, you know, Driscoll, you know, who is the brother of the Driscoll who was at Louisiana Tech, you know, he's kind of great at managing the game, getting the ball to the, you know, good Florida athletes and riding those running backs, and I think they're just kind of getting in a comfort zone. And you know, the first couple games, I know fans were kind of up in arms. We weren't running the ball enough. We were trying to throw it, and that wasn't our strength. And they're, you know, and all five linemen have been healthy this year. Knock on wood, they haven't missed a game. So you're kind of getting in a really good pattern here these last couple weeks.
So do you feel like you guys are going bowling this season?
I'm very confident. I think the East is weak this year. I think, you know, I you see out West, it's a little stronger with, you know, you guys improving, UTSA, La Tech, obviously. You know, we still have Charlotte and FIU on the schedule. I think, you know, those are the two of the three worst teams.
Yes.
West Kentucky is obviously taking a big step backwards. You know, somewhat the schedule kind of lays out nicely. You know, we get you guys at home after a bye week for us. We get Marshall at home, who I think is probably the best team in the East right now. I don't think Western Kentucky is very good at all. We get Marshall at home on a Friday night, so a shortened week. You know, it was always a little bit of an advantage. So there's no team right now who I think is dramatically better than us. Our defense is improving. You know, when people, I see kind of the old Dominion fans talking this week, you know, they don't think our defense is very strong, but we're kind of a team that, you know, plays very Florida-esque. They'll give up a lot of yards, but we're going to play for three or four turnovers, and that's how we're going to try to beat you defensively. Yeah. You know, I know how good North Texas offense is. You know, they come in, they get a lot of first downs, but, you know, I know our secondary's goal will take the ball away three or four times, and that's how they're going to try and stop you.
Yeah,
a lot of man coverage.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting when North Texas goes down there. Like I said, I haven't watched a whole lot of FAU football. That's why I wanted to get you on the show and kind of get an idea of what's coming ahead. And then also, yeah, like North Texas, you know, we're a lot of times people look at previous versions, like what did you do last year? How much of that is going to carry over? We were terrible. We're the worst in the conference last season on offense with the, you know, like all these offensive coaches. And now I think it just kind of paying dividends. And I was expecting something similar with FAU. Like, you know, 2017, maybe you figure it out. 2018 is when it really turns on. But, I mean, from everything we've seen, you guys are kind of putting it together already. And, you know, like you said, as the season's going on, maybe I can see that trending up, which scares me a little bit. You know, I want my favorite team to get beat by the Lane Kiffin train. But I'm definitely seeing that. I agree with you. I think ODU is a win for you guys. FIU and Charlotte are definitely wins. Western Kentucky, I still think they're real good. I still have them ranked pretty high. La Tech's tough. And Marshall is better. I don't know what you get from Marshall, though. They're a little odd. They're an odd team. They played really well last week, but, you know, they went 3-9 last season. Which Marshall are you going to get? So.
Yeah, FIU's just been a team over the last 3 years where, you know, the biggest frustration is, you know, if you watch them week in and week out, I don't think anyone's figured out a way to beat themselves more than FAU has. I mean, we're just talking such just craziness at the end of games. We're kind of, you know, last week there was a point in the Middle Tennessee game where in the fourth quarter they got it to an 11-point game, and FAU went on a long drive, and scored. Using you know, a very talented tight end, sophomore tight end. I'm sure you guys will see Harrison Bryant, big 6'5 kid.
Yeah.
They went on a drive, and Middle Tennessee came back and threw an interception. And for FAU fans, like, wow, we closed out a game. You know, it was just kind of the rarity. You know, I know every FAU fan sitting there was thinking, okay, you know, how is Middle Tennessee going to get back in this one? And it's just going to come down to some silly play at the end. We closed it out, which is kind of like was the first real testament of, you know, we have a real coaching staff now. They're starting to figure out the players they have. And just again, like I said, so many players were added new to the roster in the fall. Even, you know, I keep going back to the Navy week. Lane was even hinting, like, I don't think we're ready for this game. Don't expect a lot. It's kind of crazy. He kind of knew this team wasn't ready yet.
Yeah.
You know, which a lot of coaches kind of won't hint at, but, you know, Lane is, if you read everything he says, you know, he's very honest, which, you know, gets him in trouble sometimes. He just answers questions honestly.
That's refreshing. And, you know, like, I think he doesn't have to lie. You know, he doesn't have to cover for lies or remember his lies. Like, I told you the truth. We're not ready. So I guess that is quite refreshing. You don't get a whole lot of coach speak from that guy.
Yeah, you don't. And people are always like, oh, Lane said the wrong word. You know, he's just like, oh, what's a big deal when I said this? It's not a big deal. And people, like, freak out about it. And, you know, he'll just tell you the truth when, yeah, like, he just says funny things throughout the week and be like, yeah, I didn't think that team we played was very good and we should have played better. You know, who comes out and says that, you know?
Yeah, that's like in the things not to say handbook that they hand you when you become a coach.
Yeah, but, you know, like a lot of it, you just shrug your shoulders and say, he's not wrong, you know? You know, and he just kind of says this in a nonchalant way. But, you know, the staff's been good and they're starting to come together. I mean, I think now they kind of settled the quarterback position. You know, Driscoll's never going to come out and he shouldn't against any team beat anyone throwing the ball 350 yards. It's just not how it's going to happen. They're going to run the ball. I know you guys being from Texas are familiar, you know, Kendall Briles is our offensive coordinator. So I'm sure you guys know, you're familiar with the Baylor, go. No matter how good our offense has been, everyone has more time of possession than us. But, you know, Middle Tennessee was just getting whooped. They couldn't. Their linemen weren't even getting in stances before our running back had the ball and was already 3 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, Middle Tennessee is they're like a different conversation. They're real strange. Like, you want to think that they're good, but whenever Brent Stockstill's not playing, they're just like a completely different team. It's so crazy.
But Urza is an experienced quarterback. He started there before. That's why, you know, and they still have talented receivers, and it's still the coach. And, you know, that's a pretty big rivalry for us. We've had so many games. We lost them for so many years in a row, but overtime games where 2 years ago we had a game-winning touchdown called back because the guy celebrated going into the end zone. Just literally crazy stuff like that. And, you know, their fans are kind of making the excuses with the injuries this week. But they had an experienced quarterback. They still have other talented players. And they physically weren't in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Middle Tennessee should have been better. Like, I'm kind of disappointed in them, like, overall. Speaking of, like, FAU, FIU, Middle Tennessee, all the old Sun Belt teams, Western Kentucky even, I remember when they were terrible. I remember when Western Kentucky was so bad that they were North Texas's only win.
I feel like a
connection, like our old Sun Belt squads. I'm like, I kind of want to root for us. I root a little bit for FAU, and I think last season, I expected more from FAU, and then it was really disappointing. So I kind of see what you're feeling there.
There's a couple of things that, you know, with the conference, and, you know, I know you guys probably get a little bit more from out west. It's, you know, it's, you know, all day you hear from the Southern Miss fans and La Tech fans how, you know, they kind of have this older brother type sense because, you know, they beat someone in the 80s, you know, and, you know, I just get this, like, you've been the same program for 50 years. You're always going to be what you're going to be. You'll never be more. 100 teams have come into conferences with you and have all passed you. And you're just going to be the same programs you were. And, they kind of have this Napoleon syndrome about it. It's, you know.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, they do feel that.
They are. I mean, is La Tech football going to be anywhere more than they are right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, that's a kind of hot take from Shane over here. I mean, it's true.
They're never going to be anything more. I mean, Southern Miss's best days are probably behind them. They're probably, you know, not going to say that they're not going to have years where they maybe win 10 games and catch a good coach. But, I mean, in the end, you know, other programs have just passed them. You know, they're in small southern towns. Recruiting's limited. Coaching is limited. Funds are limited.
Those are excellent points. I mean, I think FAU, FIU even. How much of a rivalry do you have, do you feel, with, like, FIU? Is that
okay? We hate them, but there's two very different athletic departments or two different very types of schools. I hate people get mixed up. FAU is a little bit more traditional. Mm-hmm. The student support, and you know, not that we're killing it with attendance, but you know, we're a lot younger school.
Yeah.
But you go to FIU, it's kind of desolate. It's in a weird place. And their athletic department just doesn't support it as much. You know, FAU is about to, or they have broken ground, quote unquote, on a $60 million athletic facility that's going next to the stadium. Most of that came from one large private donation. So the administrator, you know, President Kelly, the school president, came from Clemson. So he was the one who moved on Lane Kiffin. From the Lane Kiffin hiring was even above our AD's head. He was just kind of along for the ride. So the school's administration is, they are 100% in on football.
To go in on Lane Kiffin, that says, hey, we're serious.
You know, I think Garcia for, you know, North Texas fans don't know, he has just connections with Bush Davis going back to Miami. And, yeah. You know, football recruiting is kind of crazy down here, and Bush Davis really hasn't been a name in South Florida since 2001. So, you know,
yeah.
it was a splash hire to anyone 40 and older for FIU. So, and, you know, Bush Davis and Garcia were friends going back, and I literally think he handed his friend a retirement job. So, you know, just look at the FAU outperformed Butch in recruiting. Lane got hired 2 months after Butch. And what, you know, FIU needed a missed field over Charlotte to win this weekend.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll win another game this year.
Yeah, they are one of the worst teams. I mean, if there were no Charlotte, there were no Rice or UTEP, you'd just be like, wow, Florida International is terrible.
Yeah. Those four teams are all kind of interchangeable for me right now. Like I said, obviously the West, you know, is a lot stronger this year with you guys, UTSA and Louisiana Tech. But we'll kind of see, you know, Old Dominion's a big one. Let's see if, you know, FAU can put something back to back. I'm actually going up there this weekend, so need to see it firsthand.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, good luck on your trip. I don't want to keep you on too long. I appreciate the talk. And, you know, this was fun. We'll probably have you on Main Green Nation podcast probably during FAU week, and we can talk a little bit more about Conference USA, you know? Like, we are the few Conference USA fans.
Yeah, definitely bring it back on. We'll probably have a couple more. We'll definitely... you know, there's part of me that's, you know, definitely rooting for North Texas against UTSA. And, you know, if we win our game, it could, you know, you could have your two conference leaders meeting. I can't remember, you know, last time we had a really big, important conference game in our stadium. So,
yeah, I mean, that's, you know, pretty, like, even back to the Sun Belt days, I mean, like North Texas and FAU never really had a big, hey, this means something for the Sun Belt conference game either. So it'd be cool to have one of those games for these two schools that way. All right, man. Do you want to kind of give your credentials? Where can we find you on the internet and all that good stuff?
I'm just a fan. I do help with the podcast for the Owl's Nest. It's owlsnest.com. You could find at Owl's Nest. And, you know, there's a weekly podcast there. It's the fan forum. So as the game gets closer, if any of your fans want to log on, a few fans are really friendly. none of them really, you know, if you log on to the forum, people are, like, grateful, like, hey, what's going on? Let's talk football. So, you know, definitely go on there, post. If any North Texas fans are, I know a lot of people like to try, you know, make the excuse to travel to South Florida.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a few people making their way down there just to hang out in South Florida, really.
Yeah, the stadium's beautiful. The area where campus is in Boca is literally, it's absolutely gorgeous. And just give you, you know, advice, you know, get tickets and where to go and what to see.
All right, cool, man. Thanks a lot for joining. Again, good luck this week. Bad luck against us, okay? How about that? All right.
Thank you, man.
All right, thanks. Next up, we talked to Jason Jones of the Rivals La Tech site. Here's what he had to say about Louisiana Tech and other Conference USA teams. All right, Jason. So Louisiana Tech, by my estimation, is the best team in Conference USA. Am I wrong in thinking that?
I think they're probably the best chance to be the best team, but they're so young. It's just, I want to put that kind of label on them, but at the same time, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, okay, but look at all these freshmen and sophomores that are playing, and look at, how well some of the other teams are playing in the West, like North Texas, like UTSA. Can you really put this much expectations on Tech? But the Tech teams of the last two or three years have got those expectations, and with those expectations come, hey, now you got the target on your back.
Yeah, I think a lot of people maybe look at Louisiana Tech and say, well, the play of Jamar Smith hasn't been that great. I think it's been pretty good, pretty great, especially considering the circumstances. Like, where do you rate his play so far this season?
Yeah, I would give him a B+, and I think he's just getting better every game. The first game against Northwestern State, he was turning the ball over, and I think he was trying to force the issue a little too much. The Mississippi State game was just a disaster with all the turnovers, and with the big crowd there, it just kind of felt like it was kind of deflating. But since then, you've seen him grow tremendously, and they go on the road and beat Western Kentucky. Now, we don't know if Western Kentucky is going to be a 6-win team, a 9-win team. We have no idea.
Yeah,
kind of like Louisiana Tech. We're judging Western Kentucky on previous years.
Yeah.
But they won on the road in a place they haven't won before. So that was big. And then they almost go beat South Carolina, should have beaten South Carolina. He had a game-winning drive where they go up and take the lead with 58 seconds left. So he basically won the game, and then, unfortunately, the defense couldn't hold on. So, just a few weeks, made huge strides. And then South Alabama, he had his two top offensive linemen not available on the left side there, so they've got replacements in. His deep threat, Rasheed Bonnet, goes out after the first quarter. And so they stalled for the second and third quarter, and South Alabama pulled within one. I'm thinking, oh, boy, here we go. And, he leads a couple of drives, and they score a couple of touchdowns, and, hey, game over. So he's maturing so much, and I try not to think of him as like some 18-year-old kid. I mean, it's his third year in the system. I think he just turned 21, or he's about to turn 21. But, yeah, every game he gets under his belt, he just gets better and better.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about that South Carolina game. I watched the end of it. I think, like most people that were following Conference USA at that point in time, maybe even some SEC fans, I thought maybe Louisiana Tech got a little too conservative on that final drive. They could maybe have pushed, ate up some more time, maybe even scored a touchdown. What did you think about that?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. The last two coaches at Louisiana Tech were just total opposites. And so you had a game a few years ago, I think it was 2011. Houston was in town, and Tech gets up by like 30 points.
Yeah.
And Sonny Dykes, his philosophy is you don't slow it down, you don't do clock management, you keep that foot on the gas. Well, they had a couple of three and outs, and he's not running the ball or running the clock, and Houston starts coming back. And so Skip Holtz is the opposite. He's a coach's coach. He's going to do it by the book. I mean, he's been doing this for so long, he knows how to do it. And South Carolina, I felt like he did it just like he did the Western Kentucky the week before. He did it by the book. They kick the field goal. They go up with, 58 seconds left. The game should have been over. So he forced them to use up all their timeouts. He did it by the book, and it just, you had one of those fluke plays or two fluke plays in the final minute that bit him in the butt. He's got his critics. They'll say, hey, he should have been trying to score more. Not in the last drive. Maybe he should have gone for a touchdown, but maybe the drive before that or the drive before that, maybe they should have kept going up tempo. And we saw it last week against South Alabama. The game was close, 3-1, and he decided to go up tempo. Maybe it was because of the lack of offensive linemen that he had available. Outlaw and Dugas were not in the game at that point. He decided to go up tempo, and they scored twice and ran away with it. Maybe we'll see him build on that going forward. Maybe he's on to something. But that's been something that's kind of, been a critique of his for the last few years. The Kansas State game 2 years ago, people felt like he should have kept the foot on the gas. a little bit more. And, you know, it just came back to biting. I think, I want to say the Marshall game maybe in 2014, the conference championship game, you know, they had a lead and they weren't able to hold on to it. So maybe he got a little too conservative. I don't know, but I felt like he still put the team in a position to win at South Carolina, and you just can't give up a touchdown in 58 seconds when the other team has no timeouts.
Yeah, I like to say sometimes football is a simple game. Sometimes you just get beat on a drive, right?
Yeah. I mean, they made two unbelievable plays, and they won the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like I said, I feel like Louisiana Tech, given everything you said, I still feel like the most complete team, probably the most complete coaching staff, just a lot of things in place already that, you know, just just everything's in place. I just feel like if there's a weakness, there's another strength that can cover for it, right? You have a young team, but a staff that's been in place for a while. So I feel good about everything you guys are doing. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And he does have a veteran staff. He's put together a great staff, and they've been together for a while now. They've had some continuity. And the schedule, I mean, how perfect does the schedule work out where you get North Texas at home, Southern Miss at home. They've got to get over that Southern Miss hump. You know, they've lost to Southern Miss the last 2 years. They got to get that win. And then Texas Antonio came to Ruston last year. But because UAB's on the schedule coming back into the league, some things got messed up, Texas hosting UTSA again. So Texas' three biggest games are all in Ruston. So, I mean, the schedule sets up perfectly. He's got talented players, albeit, you know, a lot of them are new. Teddy Bill, the best receiver, is in his first year with the program, even though he's a fourth-year junior. He's a transfer. You know, Bonnet's a young guy, sophomore. Jamar, sophomore, first year really starting. He's got a couple of young offensive linemen, Ethan Reed, you know, sophomore starting center. But, you know, even though they haven't been in those battles, the coaching staff has, some of the players have. They were there last year on the sidelines watching. They know what to do. I guess Tech fans are all just thinking, okay, you know, they're going to go to UAB and lay an egg, or they're going to, you know, lose to North Texas. They're going to lose to Texas San Antonio. We never, you know, we get these games in November, and maybe the team's looking past something, and, you know, UTSA comes in right there around Thanksgiving, and they're going to win. And so Tech's going to not find a way to not get in the conference championship game. I know that's their goal, and that's the way it looks on paper. Hey, Tech's got the best chance to get there, but I guess Tech fans are just a little reluctant to say, oh, yeah, that's where they're going.
Yeah, I think
they're kind of waiting for the other boot to drop.
Yeah, I think that's a constant theme with, like, every Conference USA fan base. Like, if you talk to them, that, you know, like, they're the least confident of the chances. It's funny, just talking to everybody else in Conference USA, everybody's like, well, yeah, North Texas is doing really great. And if you go to on the board and things, everybody's like, I don't know if we should trust ourselves yet, you know. So that's kind of a constant theme. I think right now, like, according to, like, say, S&P Plus, you know, Football Study Hall's ranking system, I think UTSA has the best, like, win probability or something like that. Like I said, I disagree a little bit with them, and I give you guys the best chance. But, I mean, so how is the season matching up with your preseason expectations? Were you kind of, you know, predicting the wins and losses as they came?
Yeah, so, I mean, my kind of line of thinking was somewhere around 8-4. I felt like, you know, if Tech could get a win against either, you know, Mississippi State or South Carolina, then maybe they could have a special season. And if they could get that early win against Western Kentucky, then maybe they could have a special season, and they might. They did get that Western Kentucky win. They could win 9 or 10 games, which they have not done in the regular season under Skip Holtz. They've won 8 regular season games a lot, but they haven't gotten that 9 or 10 like a Western Kentucky has recently or a Marshall, you know. But I think the schedule sets up, and they'll have more veterans next year, and so maybe it's a year ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, hey, maybe they have 9 or 10 wins in 2018 or 2019 when Jay Moore's a senior. But to do it this early, maybe that's a little bit too much expectation. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe if they drop a game that you don't expect to win, you know, that you don't expect to lose, maybe a Florida Atlantic or UAB, you just drop, you know, you lay an egg, have a bad game, you lose that one. You lose to either North Texas or San Antonio, you know, another good team. You're still 8-4. You're not going to go to the conference championship game, but you're going to be. Texas, never been to four straight bowl games. That'd be a great year for such a young team. So I think that's kind of the expectation, but they're just, you're still hopeful that they can, you know, make a run and maybe only lose zero more games or one more game and finish with those 9 or 10 wins. I mean, and of course that's the hope, but as a fan, but, you know, realistically you're thinking, it's probably going to be more like 8 wins, which would still be a great season.
So, like, the advanced stats say that Louisiana Tech's not really an explosive rushing team, that you're kind of middle of the pack, and the defense is maybe not so great. I think that's kind of heavily influenced by that Mississippi State game.
I think so, too.
Yeah, like, how much of the advanced stats, and, like, you know, when we tune in to watch y'all against UAB, you know, what is the difference there, you know what I mean? I mean, you've been watching all these games. What have you seen that the stats don't tell us?
I think the defense is tremendously improved. I mean, when you look at holding South Carolina to 17 points, South Alabama 16, Western Kentucky to 22, I think. I mean, the last 3 weeks, the defense has really clamped down. I think they've built depth on the defensive line they've never had before. They really are three deep on all four spots on that D-line. And, we've never seen that in Ruston, ever. And so the defensive line's really good, and then they've got some young corners. I mean, everybody's excited about Amik Robertson, the true freshman. They don't throw to his side. I mean, the guy is just a shutdown corner. But then the two sophomores on the other side, Ladarius Sneed started last week. Aaron Roberson started the week before. They're both having good years so far. And, you know, they've made mistakes. All three of them have. But we've got some talent at corner that we haven't seen in a while. And so – with that defensive line putting pressure up front, those corners being able to really put some pressure on the receivers, the defense is really just taking huge strides this year. And so I feel like even though their stats show kind of, like you said, in the middle of the country, 60th, 70th in the country, 75th, nothing spectacular. A lot of that was influenced by the Mississippi State blowout and then also the Northwestern State game in the week one. But the offense turned the ball over so many times, the defense just really got put in a tough spot. I think the last 3 weeks, they brought those numbers down. I think they'll continue to do so. I don't think UAB or Southern Miss, you know, will score a ton of points on Louisiana Tech. You know, I'm not saying that those are going to be easy wins or by any means. Tech could lose either one, but I don't think they're going to score over, say, 30 or 35 points. It's going to be another kind of mid-range 20-something points, maybe 30-point kind of game. And so Tech's defensive rankings are going to come down.
Yeah, I mean, like, Southern Miss, they're explosive. I mean, they still got Ito Smith. They still got those wide receivers that can still break plays. But, like, Quadra Griggs is not the most accurate quarterback. So, I mean, that's the key to unlocking, you know, your receivers, being able to get them the ball. So I agree with you there. And I do like Louisiana Tech's defenders. You guys are really tough. That's why I'm not super hopeful about North Texas going out there and resting. One, it's on the road, and then two, I think you guys match up well with, you know, our strengths. Yeah. You know? So.
Well, I'll tell you what. I went to Denton last year, and it was a great game. I was really impressed by the venue. You know, the stadium is unbelievable. The crowd was great. The tailgating, and then, you know, the game was amazing. I was thinking, hey, I mean, I was not expecting, and that early in Coach Latrell's tenure for North Texas to be that good. But I was like, you know, these guys are really well coached. And so I'm thinking this coming year, you know, when they come to Ruston, it's going to be a battle. And I really expect it to be, you know, so we'll see. Just luckily, like I said, the schedule breaks for Tech. They got to get over that Southern Miss hump first. They're coming to Ruston. And then I think North Texas comes in about a month or a little more. And it's going to be a great game. Who knows? I mean, it could be for first place in the conference, you know, depending on what San Antonio does, you know, in their schedule. They've got a tough schedule coming up. So, I mean, I'm really impressed with North Texas. I've always loved Wilson at running back. I mean, I felt like he was probably one of the top one or two running backs in the conference the last year or so, year and a half. And, you know, Tech's going to have their hands full, like you said, trying to stop Ito Smith for Southern Miss, but then, you know, Jeffrey Wilson as well.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like last season, there was a lot of good quarterbacks in Conference USA, and then this season, it's kind of like the year of the running back. There's a lot of really talented running backs this season. Where can we find your work on the internet? You want to give a little?
Yeah, I bounce around. You know, I was with Underdog Dynasty for a little while. I've been with Scout.com, but I'm with Rivals.com now, just kind of helping out. So I try to write at least an article or two a week. And you can see me on BleedTapeBlue.com. That's the Rivals site. Or on Twitter, at Big Jason Jones.
All right. Appreciate your time, man. And good luck next week, but not against North Texas.
Exactly. I understand. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Finally, we talked to Alex Nicholas of our favorite UTEP site, I guess the only UTEP site, MinorRush.com, which is on the SB Nation Network. Here's what he had to say about Conference USA and all the turmoil that's happening in El Paso. All right, so let's turn our attention to UTEP. The Miners are probably the most interesting Conference USA team right now because, hey, they fired the coach. Sean Coogler was let go or, like, quit. Or, you know, I think it was kind of like a mutual thing. What are your thoughts on the program, Mike Price is the interim guy, and what to expect from UTEP the rest of the way?
I mean, right now the program is, I mean, very, very close to being in the quote-unquote in shambles label. I mean, there's just been so much that's gone on. I mean, not to mention, I mean, UTEP's dead last in FBS and total offense, total defense, which is the what I call the bitty boost stats. But, I mean, you look at scheme-wise, you look at, you know, execution-wise, it just hasn't been there for this UTEP team. I mean, on the field, you know, that's really what was kind of the main story, the main dish of the first 4 weeks before this Fugler news broke. And I mean, that's really what it came down to, just how bad UTEP's been. I mean, Oklahoma just shredded UTEP. I mean, I think Baker Mayfield completed his first 16 in a row. He was 19 of 20 at halftime for 300 plus yards. I mean, I think that was kind of the writing on the wall. And then you get to this week, and you know, to me, this has kind of been brewing for Sean Coogler over the past couple of years, the lack of creativity, the lack of offensive diversity, and just, you know, a basic passing game. And that's, you know, we understand what Sean Coogler wanted to build, and we knew 300-yard games were going to be very, very rare, but at least to see some type of viable passing game, and that was really the downfall of Sean Coogler. And then in steps Mike Price, who this week against Western Kentucky, you probably won't see big changes in terms of offensive creativity. But I think you'll see going forward, I think you'll see UTEP go more back to what Price's background is, that one-back spread type of deal. And I think once UTEP's bye week comes up here in a couple of weeks, I think that is when you'll see the most drastic changes, you know, just scheme-wise. But overall, as a program, I mean, right now it's definitely in its lowest point. And, you know, UTEP's a 100-year perennial loser, so, you know, there's been some pretty, pretty low points. But fan support, money, and obviously an 0-4 start and, you know, a coaching change and administrative fails has UTEP been a very dark place right now.
So what was your take on bringing Mike Price as the interim guy? I think a lot of people were surprised by that move. I mean, from what I read of your site and your stuff on Twitter, you were not too excited about it. Is that summing up right?
Yeah, and that's me. It's kind of weird. We're split at Minor Rush right now. My partner Anthony is just thrilled to have Mike Price back, and I'm kind of on the fence of, you know, I sided with the coaches of, you know, at this point, you know, that locker room is already, you know, the word I'm looking for is already kind of temperamental. And, you know, looking at Monday of what both offensive coordinator Brian Nack and defensive coordinator Tom Mason said, I mean, they made it pretty clear with Bob Stoll sitting not even 5 feet away that they didn't want anybody from the outside. And that right there was a big trigger for me. I've been in locker rooms my whole life as an athlete, and I understand where they're coming from. And that's why I disagreed with it. And not only that, but the way that it was handled, you know, there's no blueprint. There's no owner's manual on how to, you know, deal with the midseason coaching change. But I felt for this team, as close as they were with Sean Coogler, and as much as hurtful and whatever, you know, words you want to use to describe of how this team felt, I think it was the safe move to just promote within. Yeah, you're going to lose an extra coach. You're going to be down now, you know, two coaches in a sense, almost three coaches if you promote an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, but just keep it in-house, keep these kids comfortable. And the kids reacted in a way that I didn't expect. And that's kind of where from my disgruntledness or whatever you want to call it with that move of bringing in Mike Price. And not only that, for me, Mike Price ruined UTEP, my UTEP football hype back in 2010, 2012 with lazy recruiting, unable to get that offense back to where we had seen it when Mike Price first started back in 04 and 05. So the warm welcome that Mike Price got at UTEP for me was worn out during his last couple of years. And I just felt that that was just a typical UTEP mode of retreading, trying to bring back something that didn't work. And, you know, just some inside information here. And this is, I don't know if UTEP fans listen to this, but UTEP's first choice was actually Dennis Erickson to be the interim guy. And Mike Price, you know, that didn't work out for the reason. So was Mike Price. But I would have loved to have seen Dennis Erickson on the sideline, you know, coaching UTEP in the interim. But, you know, it is what it is. I just thought, you know, the whole thing about it was not so much Mike Price, but just the way that the administration handled this interim coach instead of keeping it within, which I thought would really, really help the kids just stay together. And I think it fractured that more than it did help this team kind of come together, which they need to do.
Yeah, I think I see a lot of parallels from, like, North Texas 2015 season when, you know, Dan McCartney was let go. There's a lot of the same criticisms, like the offense was stayed. You know, the recruiting was lacking, and, like, there's a lot of people that were upset with the administration and a lot of things. North Texas ended up, you know, cleaning house, basically. We got a new coach, we got a new, you know, AD, a lot of stuff happened. So I guess my advice to minor fans would be, like, hey, it is possible to turn it around. I mean, North Texas here sitting at the top of the division and with the best offense in the league. I guess you just got to make the right hires, and that's good. That's the good news, I guess. But, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot to sort out over there in El Paso. So I guess looking at this season, I mean, what are your hopes? Like, the best case scenario for UTEP going the rest of the way?
Knocking off UTSA, knocking off Middle Tennessee on the road, and if you guys in North Texas is an opportunity to clinch a division title, knock them off. I think that's really kind of the hope right now. It's just do the unexpected and beat somebody you're not supposed to. I think at this point, that's the only thing that'll bring me personal joy, looking at it from a fan standpoint, not so much as a blogger or a reporter standpoint. I think that is something that'll really kind of just juice up the fan base and also juice up the kids. You know, is it possible? No. I mean, let's just be real. But that would be, you know, kind of the Super Bowl, you know, per se. And even this week against Western Kentucky, even though Western Kentucky's kind of having a quote-unquote down year for their standards the past couple of years, I think just beating, you know, the top-level team, something that UTEP hasn't done, and UTEP hasn't done well under still the Sean Coogler era in my mind, and UTEP hasn't done well against five teams that are over 500. So that's really something that I want to see, really for the kids as well, just so that way they can have some type of hope going into whether it's beating UTSA coming up a bye week and going forward towards the end of the season. Because, you know, winning 6 out of 7 isn't going to happen. I know, I understand that. You know, some UTEP fans are shooting for the stars, you know, and that's fine. You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion or optimism. But, you know, like I said, just knocking off somebody, particularly a UTSA and our place, that would really, really kind of make me happy.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing about you guys is that I think that a couple of seasons where I felt like we had the better team, like maybe even last year and the year before that, like, you guys won. And so I feel like y'all have our number. I don't know what it is. But it, you know, it's weird and it's a little frustrating, I gotta say. I turning our attention a little bit towards the rest of the conference. I mean, who do you see winning the West? I personally think that Louisiana Tech is the best team in the conference and therefore the best team in the division. I mean, I like their staff and I like their players, even though they're kind of young right now. I think they have, you know, the right pieces in place. I know, you know, as you said, people consider Western Kentucky in a down year, but I still think they're the best team in that division. I mean, how do you see the conference at this point in time?
Yeah, I totally agree with you with Louisiana Tech. I've been buying stock with them since the offseason. I mean, I really, really like what Skip Holtz has been able to do, not only to stick around and not, you know, get persuaded from a Power 5 job or a lower-level Power 5 job. And his name really hasn't come up much, but I'm pretty sure he's had that opportunity. But what he's done recruiting-wise offensively and now with Jamar Smith at quarterback, that kid's a very talented player for Conference USA standards. And, you know, we can see him really becoming the star in the face of the West Division the next couple of years. And, you know, I'm really, really high on Louisiana Tech. I know a lot of people were high on UTSA, and I like their defense, but, you know, they haven't really played anybody that can really, really give their offense a challenge where, you know, they could just run over everybody, run their base stuff. And that's something that I think will be tested this week against Southern Miss. But, yeah, I think Louisiana Tech, it's theirs to lose. I mean, that UTSA-Louisiana Tech game, which I think is the last game of the season, if I'm not mistaken, that's going to be a battle. That could be, you know, at the beginning of the season, I thought maybe that would be an elimination game in terms of, you know, the West representation. But I'm not sleeping on what North Texas has done offensively. I mean, that's a very, very good unit. Mason Fine's coming into his own. And I would think that they would be that third team or that dark horse if you catch UTSA on a bad day, North Texas knocks them off. Same thing with the Louisiana Tech match up with that. So that I really like Tech. And then out of the East, you know, Western Kentucky, obviously I was high on them too, like I was Louisiana Tech. But Marshall looks really, really legit right now at this point in the season. And it's good. As well as they recruited, I just did not see them having another down year this year. And I figured they would be kind of that team on the outside looking in. But, you know, looking at what they've done over the past couple of weeks, I mean, that's a team I think a lot of people need to pay attention to in the East to make a run. And some of those East games, some of those Western Kentucky Marshalls, Middle Tennessee Marshall, those games are going to be exciting, and those are going to be elimination games. But right now, if I had to pick a two, I would definitely go Louisiana Tech and Marshall. And then, you know, Western Kentucky right behind Marshall in the East, you know, just as talented as they are, they're still trying to figure out, you know, what they want to be offensively, you know, with the kind of the transition with Mike Stanford. And I think this week against UTEP is a get-right week for them. And that'll kind of tell me a lot about how close that East race will be, which, I mean, obviously right now it's pretty wide open in both divisions.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think, like, Western Kentucky, you know, a mark of a good team is that they beat teams that they should beat. And obviously UTEP is kind of in turmoil right now that, you know, they're not 100% focused on Western Kentucky, you know, with everything going on. So a good team should be able to completely take apart a team that's not really, you know, that's going through turmoil. So I agree with you that we'll see if Western Kentucky is a good team based on this matchup. It's kind of one I'm looking to watch. You make some good points about Marshall. I don't know if I trust them just because they had a good team last season and then they had that 3-9, you know, debacle. But yeah, they have all the pieces in place. They got Chase Litton. They have a staff in place. They've had, you know, the number one, number two recruiting classes in the conference, you know, 3 or 4 years before this. So, you know, they have all the pieces there. You'd kind of expect them, like, to win, and it shouldn't be surprising, but I guess for me, it still kind of is. Yeah, good stuff, man. I think, what do you think about Florida Atlantic? They are surprising me. I thought they'd be worse this season, but they're a little bit better than I expected, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at last year, and I told Cyrus over at Underdog Dynasty when they first hired Kiffin, they had so many offensive line issues last year with injuries and whatnot, and I felt last year's team under Lane Kiffin could go 6-6. I mean, easily. And, you know, this year it seems like they figured out their offensive line problem. It seems like they have an identity offensively, and I haven't seen them too much on the defensive side. But, you know, you get – it is kind of – put this into what I've been preaching about the UTEP situation. When you bring in a football culture guy like Lane Kiffin, Seth Littrell starting to become that, Frank Wilson is that, you know, that changes your program. That changes what you are. And you go from perennial loser, perennial doormat to now you're a contender. Not only that, but I love the Devin Singletary kid. That running back is talented. He's going to play in the NFL in the future. And I like that mix. I like that culture mix. You know, I hope Lane can stick around for 2 or 3 years to set FAU kind of up just for Group of Five success. So that way, you know, that investment Conference USA makes in the Florida schools can at least go somewhere with Florida Atlantic. And I really like them. I don't know if they'll contend, you know, and surprise anybody and, you know, make a late run for a push for an East Division crown, but I would love to see them in a bowl game. I would love to see them, you know, continue this momentum that they have. And it's going to be real interesting to see as we approach the midway point of the season, if they can continue this and not kind of fizzle out and end up 5-7, if they can, you know, really turn the corner and go 7-5, 8-4. That'll be huge for that program. And I think they're on the right track with Lane. You know, obviously still a long way to go, but I look at these culture builders, like I like to call them, around Group of Five, which you have to have. And Lane Kiffin, obviously, you know, been around for a long time, and he's a big name in college football. And I think just those type of hires really energize. I mean, even look at FIU, even though FIU hasn't played anybody, but, you know, that Butch Jones infused some energy, and, you know, all across Conference USA. And I think that these coaching changes are just so important, not only for the conference, but for these individual programs to continue to grow and continue to make a name for themselves. And I've been real impressed what Lane's been able to do.
Yeah, you make a good point about Lane Kiffin. I think what people forget about him when they think about him and all the controversy is that he's won. I mean, he had USC playing well before it kind of fell apart. I mean, obviously won a national championship with Alabama. I mean, he's a good coach. You know, if he is controversial, but there you go. Hey man, I appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for giving me your time on a Friday. Why don't you tell the internet where we can find you on the internet?
Yeah, check us out at SBN Minor Rush on Twitter. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/MinorRush. MinorRush.com is the website. We'll have previews of Conference USA basketball coming up here in the next couple of weeks as well. Check out our weekly podcast. And you can find me at Twitter at NicholasAlex915.
All right, man. Appreciate it. You have a good one. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Adam.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again for listening to the Mean Green Nation podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You can find us on the internet and all that other good stuff, meangreennation.com. We are on iTunes. We usually do a podcast on Sunday, so tune in for that. Sundays during the season, we're going to try to do a live podcast. So wake up early, around 9 a.m., tweet us some questions, and, you know, we'll try to be entertaining for you as we talk about our favorite little college football team. Somebody's got to do it, right? Thanks. Go Mean Green.